Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness and trolls and liars and thieves and scumbaggery and betrayal and demonization and etc. There's lots of etc., by the way. If you lose your sense of humour, you'll go frickin' nuts. A very special guest.
Wait, let me see if I can do that in the mafia impression, considering, you know, she's just that much of a gangster.
My very special guest is Suzanne Pozzo from OccupyCorporatism.com. Welcome back.
Hello.
What's on the news for today, Suzanne?
Well, you know, we've got this universal preschool program that Obama mentioned in his State of the Union address. And they want kids to go to school much earlier. They want to spend much more time, longer periods of time, indoctrinating your children, or my children. That's why my children are homeschooled. They want to make sure that the government funds everything so that they can have control over all of the programs. A gentleman named Grover Whiteburst from the Brookings Institute, that lovely globalist think tank, is Grover supporting this.
Grover. Isn't Grover like some kind of a Sesame Street character?
He is, and you would think that it would be that innocuous, but he's not. He's evil. He works for the Brookings.
Is he incidentally also a Bohemian Grover?
I don't know. I know that he works for a globalist think tank, so either he's really dumb and ignorant and doesn't realize what he's doing, or he does and he's got some evil mad scientist cackle.
Or he has some kind of a gun to his head.
Oh my God, yes. And everybody's busting in your door.
Mm. Well, anyway, continue.
So he's got these proposals that the government should have investments financially in pre-K programs. Federal funding should influence school curriculum to ensure that indoctrination is taught as a rule for evidence-based development. The federal-state partnership to influence communities by directing public school systems. Eliminating teacher unions by federalizing teachers' salaries with credit. Oh, don't worry. We'll just give you some credit. We're not actually going to pay you. Or, hey, if you don't do what we say, we're not going to pay you. The school districts will be under the thumb of the federal government in all its totality. And this is, you know, it's bad enough that we have indoctrination in our schools. But this is just cartoon insanity ridiculous.
Well, that's what the United States is all about now, isn't it?
Yes, entertainment.
So entertained and so uninformed.
Exactly, and that's how they want to keep them. You know, you've got the model UN, the UN, where kids can learn to be UN ambassadors and debate UN agendas. They're not learning about their constitutional republic. They're not learning about their rights or what was done to ensure that they had rights, or all the people since 1776 who have fought to make sure that they have their rights. They're being taught that they're global citizens and this is a global society and your resource is my resource and my resource is my resource. And you can only have it if you have enough pieces of paper to trade for it. And that's how we run things.
Yeah. What's yours is mine and what's mine's mine too.
Exactly. And I noticed last year when we had the Chicago teachers protesting, I wrote an article about that because when I dug into what they were actually protesting, it was the UN takeover of their schools. That if they didn't adhere to UN agenda that was being infiltrated into the curriculum and into the bureaucracy in the school as far as the principals and evaluations of teachers, that they would be just fired or let go with or without pay. Their tenure was, you know, it didn't matter anymore if they had the UN to follow, and that was it.
Well,
so of course.
It occurs to me that they're simply trying to brainwash a generation into being UN lovers and supporters so that when these children, when this generation grows up, they will not have known a Republic of the United States. They will not have known a constitution. They would have only known world government.
Absolutely. And so this initiative with Obama to put kids in school much earlier, you know, it's incredible that so many decades ago they found a really good reason to tear these children away from their parents for 8 hours a day to instruct them on how they should behave and how they should contribute to our society. What was approved and not. Mm. Now.
Yeah, well, look at it this way. With the technology that we've got now, just Skype alone, public schools are virtually a thing of the past, you know, or at least they frickin' well should be. Yet, the government's not doing any of that. They're not utilizing technology to free children from the drudgery of having to get up at a particular... I don't know about you, Suzanne, but I frickin' hated school. I hated every minute of it.
I did too. I didn't have a good time in school.
I mean, it just sucked. You know, everybody who you're hanging out with, you're only hanging out with them because you didn't want to be totally by yourself. And it kind of like forced me into this sort of social leech syndrome where I didn't necessarily 100% click with the people that I was hanging out with during lunchtimes or in class or whatever, but I just didn't really have much of a choice, and it was a hell of a lot better, of a better option than just being totally by myself and being a recluse and things like that. And that's not a good thing to teach kids, I think. I mean, and I learned differently after school what real friendship is actually about. It's about giving a frack about each other. It's about going the extra mile for each other. It's about being there for each other when you're absolutely desperately needed, not just being there because you don't really have any other choice. And I think this is the reason why none of the people that I was ever friends with in high school, primary school, elementary, whatever, are my friends today, because they weren't really my friends.
Absolutely. I didn't buy into what was popular. I chose to read books and eat my lunch by myself. And growing up in an area where there's a lot of cultures, what I found interesting was during lunchtime, everyone would naturally segregate. The Cubans would sit with the Cubans, the blacks would sit with the blacks, with the Mexican Hispanics would sit together, the whites would sit together. And nobody really, there was nothing nefarious going on. Like-minded liked like-minded. What made you more like me, I wanted to be around. And since I wasn't into, I went to a school that was a lot like 90210 for high school. And since I didn't really care about what was popular, I got to observe things more than participate. And I was perfectly fine with that. But like you said, the same thing happened for me. It wasn't until I got out of high school and I started actually making friends that I realized that how we treat other people is exactly what we get back. And if you are that person that everybody knows they can depend on and trust, then that will always come back to you. Anytime you ever need anything, there'll be a multitude of people who are willing to give it to you.
Yeah, provided you are friends with people who are actually your friends and not just, you know, using you or whatever. And, you know, that's happened to me many times. And the other thing I didn't like about high school was the fact that I didn't like the lessons that I was being taught. You know, it seemed really boring and pointless. And sure enough, other than basic math and basic English, I have not learned a single thing throughout my entire high school or university career that has ever been of any use whatsoever in any practical or philosophical or realistic manner.
That was a dilemma I realized for me when I sat down to homeschool my son, that beyond teaching him how to read and write and structure sentences and the proper way to write things and basic math skills, everything else is up for grabs. So I teach him a little bit of everything and try not to try to get him to have an open mind to the idea that we've got a lot of theories, and the information that's been disseminated down to us is not there for functionality. It's there to so we have trivial things to talk about, but we don't really know anything if we're paying attention to mainstream or paying attention to even the scientific studies that come out and the educational television and educational books. It's all really just for factoids. So you sound like what you're talking about.
Yeah. I think I do like factoids, you know. I mean, they do sometimes offer some very great insight as to how the world really is or how it really works. But in terms of, again, practical application, do you get taught how to create a product, start a business, or learn a trade in high school? And in most cases, not. So when you come out of school, what are you going to do? You're either going to go into a slave job that's unskilled, pays bugger all, and won't really advance your intelligence or anything. Maybe at best you'll learn some kind of a work ethic out of it. Provided you don't have a work ethic already, like if you were a pampered, bratty child of some description, then you'd learn, oh, suddenly I have to actually get my pull finger and do some work myself.
When I got to college, there was a strange phenomenon that happened here, and I don't know if it's the same for you over in New Zealand, but everything became a trade. A two-year or six-month or year-and-a-half course on how to fix something. There was no education. There was no higher thought. You were taught to perform a function. And I even bought into that. I became a paralegal and got a paralegal degree because it was easy, it was quick, it was cheap, and it would, you know, $70 an hour that's pretty good pay. Yeah, let's go for that. But it was only a two-week course. There's no way I should have or was able to learn everything I needed to know to actually perform the function well, to do the basic function, of course, but to be a good paralegal, to have an open mind and an understanding of what the legal system really is and how it's changed and been manipulated and redirected over the decades? Absolutely not. I got nothing like that. I just got training on how to write documents, how to write summons, petitions, complaints, answers, you know, memorizing words and having a Black Law dictionary. And that, living in Florida, everybody was learning how to fix air conditioners. You know, that was the big thing. There's no higher education. There's no complex thought. And that helps you understand and navigate your environment. That ability to facilitate higher thought and be able to reason and deduce. And it's not just based on experience. You also have to have the neurological capability to do that. And that's something that's taught. I have two small children. They just run right into the wall. Obviously, they don't have good, they don't understand consequence. They don't understand that what they're doing right now is going to affect what's about to happen to them or might happen to them later this evening or even into tomorrow. And we're not getting any of that.
Well, it's education, if you translate it into what it really means, it just means indoctrination. And people don't know where public schooling came from. They don't realize that it was the Prussians versus the French in a war prior to World War One, where the Prussians had public schooling and they had huge quantities of these brainwashed, mind-controlled, state-loving children coming out of these schools in order to go onto the fronts, whereas the French didn't, and the French got the pants beaten off them. And after that happened, every major Western government went, whoa, we need public schools. And in the United States, the very first public schools, children, I've seen actually like old black and white grainy footage of this. Children being dragged by soldiers on horseback with ropes from their parents to go to public school, right? That is what public school really is, ladies and gentlemen. It is a place that you are forced to go by your tyrannical government so that they can brainwash you, so that they can use you later on as cannon fodder, basically.
Absolutely. And now that this initiative has come to the forefront, since this State of the Union, everyone is, I'm seeing a lot of movement in media about homeschooling. It's like all of a sudden now when he's introducing universal preschool, now that the ball is about to hit the floor, it dropped already, it's about to hit the floor, now you act. Now all of a sudden parents are scrambling to homeschool.
It's ironic that they talk about universal preschool and universal health care, but they don't teach you nothing about the universe. And how it really works.
Yes, absolutely.
Suzanne Pozel from OccupyCorporatism.com. Thank you very much for this little news break here. And after the break, I believe Mike Sparks will be talking about how 007, James Bond himself, was actually a real person. We'll be right back after the break at TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide. We're broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island changed nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's not only fluoridated, it's also Fukushima irradiated, which is good for the economy because everybody managed to snap up a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb. My very special guest is Mike Sparks. Welcome to the program, Mike.
Glad to be here.
Why don't you elucidate? Or Illuminati about yourself to the audience and myself.
My name is Mike Sparks, and I'm the author of James Bond is Real. And this book is about how Ian Fleming really was James Bond. We take his novels and some of the movies, because he was involved in the movies until Goldfinger in 1964, as a writer and a consultant. And we show that Ian Fleming really was James Bond, that he had experiences in World War II that caused him to write. But what people don't realize is that after the war, he was still in the Naval Reserves. And when he was working with Kelmsley Newspapers, running their foreign department, he actually was running a spy ring. So Ian Fleming is writing in code in his novels, his fictional novels, and he's trying to tell us truths without getting himself killed. So Ian Fleming and what he writes are true. He says himself, everything I write has a precedent in truth. But he's under, you know, the Official Secrets Act, and if he would write openly, just say, hey, the Nazis escaped, they're in Argentina and Antarctica, let's go get them, in under where they're hiding in underground bases, he would be found dead the next morning. So he's trying to warn us about these secret society groups and their false flag attacks that they are instigating, even UFOs, and he's doing it without getting himself killed. James Bond, the actual character, is a role model for us. He's trying to tell us to be like James Bond, get off our butts and go look and find out where these secret evil groups are and defeat them. He started becoming a threat to the powers that be as his novels became worldwide famous. And so even his death is suspicious. So I'm ready to talk about all those interesting things.
But, proceed.
Okay. Well, the first thing that comes to mind, if you were watching, you know, any World War II movie, or if you then went back to, let's say, a good World War II book, and it takes you a long time just to figure out what the hell happened in World War II. So many things are happening. Why did they do this? Why did they do that? So let's just say you take the regular view of history that both, you know, Axis and Allies were trying to win the war. Even if you take that, the both sides are playing to win, it just doesn't work. You have moments in World War II where Germany is about ready to encircle the British Army at Dunkirk, and they let them go. You have situations where all they have to do is take Gibraltar, and they close the Mediterranean, and they've got North Africa, and then they could roll into the Middle East and take the oil. There are so many events like that in World War II which defy logic. For instance, the Germans didn't even take Murmansk, where we sent all the Lend-Lease stuff to the Russians. And all they had to do was go like 15 miles. So it wasn't a priority. So you have to ask the question.
What was the name of that place, Murmansk?
Murmansk is a port in you know, northern Russia, you know, where the ice is finally breaks free. You know,
so it has nothing to do with mermaids.
Did I just didn't pronounce hear what you pronounced right? Mermaids, you said.
Mermaids.
Oh, I don't know what that is. I just think Murmansk.
A half fish, half human.
Oh, okay. No. I didn't know. Think about that. No, this is not going into the speculation that much. At this point, we're going just from sound history of the world that basically you have with Hitler, you know, pulling back every time he could have succeeded and just won the war outright. So one of your countrymen, Greg Hallett, has written a book, his best book, in my opinion, called Hitler Was a British Agent, where he outlines the suspicious background of Hitler, that he was really working for the Rothschild Illuminati all through the war to keep the war going. Now, this sounds like speculation and all that, but we go straight to Anthony Sutton, and he's got a book called The Order, many books about how Wall Street put Hitler into power. But I direct the listeners to American-Buddha.com, and you go to their website, you can read Anthony Sutton's book, The Order, and he shows that the world has been operating by a concept called thesis and antithesis, the Hegelian dialect, and the thesis was Marxist Germany, Marxist Russia, then they needed a foil, which we created Nazi Germany, the Rockefeller Illuminati money made the Nazi Germany happen. The two sides would fight each other to the death, and at the end of World War II, we would have to synthesize the problems of trying to either be socialist or fascist and create a new world order. So the Illuminati playbook is to deliberately instigate wars. And Ian Fleming points that out in his novels, that things are not what they appear to be. And you have to decode both sides and see what they're doing. And don't be surprised if they're working for both sides. The bad guys will help either side to keep them in the game, so to speak.
what I find very interesting is that the plot behind almost every movie is that the bad guy is actually playing both sides, pretending to be the good guy and doing all the bad stuff and betraying everybody in the background. And yet, when you tell people, look, the government's corrupt, or they're doing this in secret or whatever, even though they've seen it a million times, they don't believe it.
Yeah, they don't want to believe in synarchy. You know, the idea of secret elites are actually planning the world's events. Now, if FDR said nothing happens in politics by accident. But what we're talking about, and I want to be crystal clear, is that your elected officials of your nation states are not running the world. They're not coming together and having a little meeting and a confab and saying, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. No, we're not going to do this. Yes, we're going to do that. And having little arguments. No, we're talking about secret groups are going away off to some rural location like Bohemian Grove or some castle in England. And when they're not having their little orgy like you saw in Eyes Wide Shut, they're having a little, a chalkboard or a little more modern digital board or, you know, dry erase board. They're planning what they're going to do behind the scenes from the false hat that they're wearing. They're supposed to be, let's say, head of the G8, or they're the head of this economic community, or they're head of this nation state. They're not actually playing the role that the people that elected them expect. They're playing a role that's driven by, I would say, three different entities. The secret societies, the Illuminati, run the world. They're at the top. You've got the banksters, and then underneath them, the intelligence agencies. These three levels are above your nation-state governmental leaders like President Obama, anybody like that. And if you don't understand that there are three levels above the apparent government of the world, you'll never figure out world history. You'll never figure out World War II. But if people think that this is all speculative, just look into how Hitler cut a deal with Stalin to start World War II. Most people will define World War II starting with the invasion of Poland. Hitler talked to Stalin behind the scenes. He's a nation-state government leader, and said, I will give you half of Poland. You let me take the other half. So if they don't think that underhanded things don't happen, just go to the non-aggression pact between Hitler and Stalin, and thank God that that thing broke up. Because if that had continued and Hitler had allowed Stalin to join the Axis, we would have been in deep trouble. And that difference, that change that caused, which was basically by Neville Chamberlain saying, we're going to defend Poland, cause Hitler and Stalin to go into bed together like that. The question is, who put Neville Chamberlain up? And the best I can see is that somebody at MI5 accused Neville Chamberlain of being a pussy, a wimp. And that so infuriated him, Chamberlain went ahead and made a boast that he was going to defend Poland. That turned the plan of the Illuminati, which is Marxist Russia and Nazi Germany thesis and antithesis, that was the original plan A of World War II. So even as that plan was going to unfold, somebody threw a monkey wrench in it. And apparently it's from somebody from MI5 telling Neville Chamberlain to do this. Now, why in the hell is MI5 telling Neville Chamberlain to do anything? They're supposed to be the internal security of England. MI6 is supposed to be in charge of figuring out what the foreign nations of the world are doing. Why is Neville Chamberlain taking advice from, you know, like the FBI, when he should be taking advice on foreign matters from somebody like the OSS? You see what I mean? So You see in history a lot of these sabotage, these backstabs taking place. So the average citizen can't really, with justification, live with his blinders on.
Yeah, and most people don't know that, I believe Nazi Germany did a deal with Stalin as well, that the Russians would invade Finland for them, and they did indeed.
Yes, that was part of the deal, yes. They would take Finland. Now, the Finns stood up to the Russians, and they got more respect out of it than what the Poles did. The Poles, in my opinion, should have said to Hitler, you know, go for it, dude. You want to go kill yourself, you know, with Hitler, and run into Stalin? You want to follow him? Go for it. they didn't win any brownie points from this, you know, the Marxists, when finally they started winning and went across, you know, Poland towards Germany. They didn't get any respect out of the Russians. They wouldn't even go come to the aid of the Warsaw Rebellion, the Russians. They just let the Nazis wipe out the Jewish people in the Warsaw ghetto, and then they continued their little march on to Nazi Germany headquarters, you know, Berlin. But you would also be good to read the book Icebreaker by Viktor Suvorov. In that book, he said the whole idea of Stalin's plan, grand strategic plan, was to let Nazi Germany weaken itself and do the groundbreaking, or in this case, icebreaking for him, by taking on the Western democracies. And then Hitler, once he was all weak, he would be easily pushed out of the way by Stalin. So in other words, this author, his name is Viktor Suvorov, that's his pen name, and his actual name is Vladimir Rezin. He's a former GRU military intelligence guy who defected to the West. He's warning us that Stalin's plan was let us weaken ourselves, and then he was going to roll in and take over all of Europe. So this evil that we talk about is not speculation. It's actual world events, and it continues to the present day, because the people who put Nazi Germany and communist Russia into power, the American Wall Street Illuminati bankers, secret societies, and intelligence agencies, they're in power today, turning the United States into a police state. All warned about by Ian Fleming.
Well, they're the hand that churns the meat grinder.
Well, right, and that was where the synthesis comes at the end of World War II. The synthesis comes that, whoa, we cannot, in the nuclear age, tolerate a Pearl Harbor. Now, Ian Fleming was involved with Pearl Harbor. Let's not make any bones about it. If England does not get America on its side, they go down. So the British intelligence knew the Japanese code. They had broken the Japanese codes. They knew the Japanese were coming, and so did FDR. FDR had broken the JN-25 codes through his naval intelligence. So key people like FDR, General Marshall, the Secretary of War, they all were very hard to get on that day, including MacArthur in the Philippines. A lot of people say, what the heck was he doing? It was a different kind of false flag attack. That's where you bait your enemy and say, look, come and attack us. We're weak. We got all these old obsolete battleships parked in rows. You know, they're not really obsolete, but that's just a picture that they're giving. Come bomb them. We knew the Japanese were coming. We moved the fleet from San Diego to Pearl Harbor so that they would attack us, because only a direct attack on the United States would cause the American sheeple, that's the way the American people are, to have enough of a blood rage to enter World War II. Without, you know, Japan attacking America, and then Hitler by treaty being obliged to declare war on the United States also, there's no way the American people would have entered war against Nazi Germany. Nazi Germany is a high technology threat that if we didn't enter the war soon and start marching on Germany, taking over their ground, taking over the actual high tech weapons laboratories, which Joseph Farrell is the best guy for describing that. You could read his book, Reich of the Black Sun. General Eisenhower at the end of the war said another six weeks, I forget which one it was, we would have been toast. The fact that we were overcoming these labs, taking out their high technology weapons before they could get weapons of mass destruction, mass produced, it was a near run thing. So the people, the neocons, say, well, we're just doing another Pearl Harbor here with 9/11. We had to stage 9/11 to get the American sheeple mad at the Islamic ragheads. Well, I'm sorry, it's not the same.
Well, it seems to me that, you know, nobody is ever really that creative that they can just make stuff up off the top of their head. It's always based on something. And I don't think
James Bond. People are smart. Yeah.
James Bond ain't no exception. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com with Mike Sparks.
Accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone.
Welcome back.
If your time to you is worth...
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the show that definitely, definitely assures you that the times are changing, for better or worse. Dunno. We seem to have lost our guest, Mike Sparks, just bringing him back up. Mike, yeah, you dropped off for just a second there. Welcome back.
Yes, how are you doing?
I'm somewhat fabulous. Just want a standard response anyway.
All right, well, that's good. You were talking about the enlightened amateurs, you know, in World War II, the people like Ian Fleming, General Gavin, Matthew Ridgway, all these people that at the last segment we were talking about how they can't make this stuff up. Well, the reason why they didn't make this stuff up is they were directly involved. World War II was the last chance, the last time we've had where the powers that be let enlightened individuals, enlightened amateurs like Ian Fleming run the show. And what happened is it ruined Plan B. Plan A was Nazi Germany and Communist Russia to kill each other. Then that was changed to, you know, going west and knocking out the Western allies. But the enlightened amateurs came back with such a fury with so many good ideas like the OSS, which Ian Fleming helped create, Office of Strategic Services, the need for intelligence agency. You can go to, you know, our website, jamesbondisforreal.com. You can see the documents Ian Fleming wrote to actually launch the OSS. All these things happened, and we became very good at war quickly, and we ended World War II on a positive note. The Illuminati were not fully happy. The Hitler experiment didn't work. And so they said in synthesis, right, that we should never let this happen again. So this is where a huge backstab took place. At the end of World War II, we got rid of the OSS. Isn't that weird? We just had a war where we were surprised, supposedly, by the Japanese Pearl Harbor attack. The OSS is fabulously successful. So Truman closes it down. Isn't that pretty suspicious? Now, we have a new James Bond movie out now called Skyfall, where an intelligence spy network is taken down. That's the theme of the movie. Well, you don't have to go to a fictional movie to see this happening. In 1945, it happened for real. The entire spy agency of the United States was taken down by Truman, which I'm, you know, researching for the next book, James Bond is Real 2, Bodyguard of Spies, as a sequel to, you know, the book we got now, James Bond is Real, The Untold Story of Political, Military, Technological Threats Ian Fleming Warned Us About. That's a mouthful, isn't it? Anyway, I'm writing the sequel and trying to figure out why did Truman do it. And it's very, very fishy. We've got one side saying he was jealous of William Donovan, General Donovan, the leader of the OSS, because his daughter, he was flirting with her, to where he was just afraid of his power. All to what I think the real reason is that we had a Nazi takeover in the United States. The Rockefeller Illuminati were not happy with what way, you know, Hitler experiment failed. So they knew that the country would have a mood switch, you know, mood change. So they said, we're going to go ahead, take advantage of it. And the right wing, you know, backlash against the liberals, you know, the FDR, Truman was supposed to be part of that group. Actually, he wasn't. And there's a lot of suspicious signs that Alan Dulles, the Nazi traitor who was with the OSS in Switzerland, that FDR was going to try him for treason at the end of war because he had taped recordings of Dulles while he was in New York City operating out of OSS headquarters there with the BSC doing the eavesdropping, British Security Coordination, the man called Intrepid. But that didn't happen, obviously, because FDR suddenly died. So the thing that you want to do is stay healthy, because if you do something like, you know, smoke too much, drink too much, like FDR did and Ian Fleming did, it's easy for somebody to knock you off, and then it'll look like it was a heart attack. But the evidence seems to be that somebody snuck into Warm Springs, which is over here in our neck of the woods, Georgia, and poisoned FDR. There was no autopsy done. So it looks like they manipulated their man, Truman, to become vice president. And this is talking about, you know, like 90 days, 93 days before the election. They switch out the second man, you know, which was going to be Henry Wallace, who was a very moral guy, a pro-democracy guy. At the end of World War II, a president like him would have had all of the countries that were former colonies declare their independence and get on their feet with self-determination. He was a guy who talked democracy, he preached it, but he also would act on it. Well, they switched him out for Truman just 3 months before the election. And then, lo and behold, the election, and then FDR is murdered. You know, I'm sorry, died. Very fishy. It's standard operating procedure. When you do a coup d'etat, a covert one, you switch out the number two man. That means that you're going to knock out the number one guy. Have you ever heard of that before?
Well, yeah, it sounds like a same kind of operation that goes on in the school playground, except it's called a coup d'etat.
Coup d'etat. Well, very good. Well, the thing is, if that will resonate with the people, if the people will say, look, in low-level life, we have people doing backstabs. You know, what makes you think that just because someone enters government service that they get this infusion of morality? I mean, obviously, I'm a military guy. I've been to basic training, officer and enlisted. I mean, there's no point where you're doing push-ups and you're reading the Ten Commandments. You know what I mean? There's no way where they're inculcating any morality in you.
Get down and give me Ten Commandments.
Give me Ten Commandments now. And if you don't get them right, you're going to keep doing push-ups until you do. I mean, that doesn't happen.
What are you going to do? Train somebody how to kill and at the same time train them that you shouldn't kill?
Yes. Thou shalt not kill. Okay, this is the M16 air-cooled, gas-operated shoulder weapon. It fires.
You can mess up some motherfuckers with this hardware, man.
Well, they've realized that that was not a good thing. If you have the hired help take over the operation, they might actually fight the war to win it and to win it quickly with the most efficiency. So at the end of World War II, they said, we can't do that. So what do you think they did? They got rid of the OSS. And Truman, such a liar. He's on my hit list. Truman is a bag of feces. He's our worst president.
I heard Truman look, if you had to just kill 250,000 people, how long would it take you to go, okay, all right, you know, let's do it? Truman took a couple of minutes or something like that, maybe even less, in order to say, yep, yes, bomb Hiroshima, bomb Nagasaki, even while the Japanese were trying to surrender.
You hit the right point, and Winston Churchill even said this. You know, why did we drop the nuclear bomb when they were already ready to throw a towel in? Primarily because the Russians had entered the war, and they were surrounded. We had surrounded the home islands with sea mines, which they couldn't deactivate. They were being firebombed by regular B-29 bombers. No, we put all this effort into the nuclear bomb. We were going to damn well use it and also tell the world we're the baddest dog in the neighborhood. That's why we dropped the nuclear bomb. It's very evil. Truman is not, you know, this populist man of the people. He was definitely under control of the military-industrial complex. So when he said, I took the OSS down because I'm afraid it will become an American Gestapo, well, what do you think he did 2 years later? Two damn years later, he actually hired back the entire General Reinhard Gehlen's Nazi apparatus, all of his agents in the Far East, and put together the CIA. He wrote signed the document creating the CIA, which actually has actual Nazis in it. You know, over 50% of the damn thing is full of Nazis. And the American CIA needs to be disbanded. I don't know how many more treasonous acts they need to do where the American people finally wake up and realize this organization is working for Wall Street. They're working for the Illuminati. They are not supporting democracy around the world. They're just supporting American business interests. So if you don't have people willing to understand synarchy, and it's the Rockefeller Illuminati, you just say Wall Street and they'll get it. But they're not working for we the people. And part of the synthesis that we talked about with Anthony Sutton, is that you create a problem and then you demand its solution. So you have this problem of a sneak attack on your nation state. The American sheep will say, yeah, but we need a CIA. I say, yeah, but we don't need the CIA to do it. We need an intelligence agency that needs to be moral, that works for the best interests of we the people, not the elites, and it needs to be have government oversight from Congress. So what organization would that? We had it. It was called the Office of Strategic Services. We had the OSS. Ian Fleming helped create the OSS. So at the end of World War II, there were a lot of these backstabs taking place. Now, your listeners are probably aware that Germany did not fall quickly, and there was plenty of time for people to get out. Now, the way to look at it is geographically. The Russians are coming from the east. We're coming from the west. There are people criticizing that we're taking too damn long to get there, and that's probably true. We didn't you know, rush headlong into Berlin to take the place down for many reasons. One is we'll let the Russians do most of the dying. The Russians and the Germans, that was where the most intense fighting was taking place. But if you look at the map, you'll notice up to the top, the northern part of Germany was open all the way to the end of the war. You could have went from Denmark to Norway to any part of the globe, and that is your escape route. Now, people will get all wrapped around the axle of Hitler escaping. That's true. It looks like he did escape. But the main guy that was the most dangerous was Martin Bormann. And I went with the book along the thesis that, look, let's look at Ian Fleming, put everything together, see everything that he did, and then what he could have done. And there is a bunch of evidence that Ian Fleming led a mission to Berlin in 1945 as it was surrounded by the Russians, parachuted into a lake, and from that lake operated kayaks, went up the river, and took out Martin Bormann. And Greg Hallett says he also took out Hitler using small, you know, short takeoff and landing airplanes. So Ian Fleming actually did James Bond missions.
Wow. Well, that's quite astounding. And Ian Fleming was a MI6 or MI5 agent?
He was both. He was an MI6 agent and a Naval Intelligence Division agent. So he was working for Naval Intelligence as a commander in World War II, but before World War II as a journalist, and after World War II as a quote unquote journalist, he's working for MI6. Reuters is owned by MI6, and Kelmsley Newspapers, where he was operating the foreign branch, he was working directly for MI6.
Mm. All right. So, if anybody ever tells you that President Truman was a real good guy and he, you know, ended the war or whatever, it's just a Truman show. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.